On today's show, Katie O'Brien and Katie Colleton of the comedy supergroup The Katydids, and the writers, producers, and stars of the half-hour series Teachers. Season 3 premieres June 5th on TV Land. Here's a clip of Katie O'Brien and Katie Colleton from the Season 2 episode Let It Flow, haranguing another teacher for pumping breast milk in the teacher's lounge. As they discuss in the interview, the show has a progressive social bent, and the joke will ultimately be on them.
I knew you'd be in here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just about to...
Without your giant gazongas, have you no shame?
What are you? A full D?
Excuse me?
Your tits, Teresa. Don't play dumb.
Okay, I really need to pump, ladies.
It's called formula, Teresa. It's the modest woman's choice.
Breast milk is much healthier for children.
Well, then find another way to squeeze it out of you, because this disgusting display is no longer welcome in the teacher's lounge.
Yeah, go milk yourself in the handicap stall. That's what they're there for.
Well, Katie O'Brien and Katie Colleton, I really appreciate you talking to me. I know I talked to y'all about a year ago when I wrote the profile of teachers for Deciders, and I was rereading that piece this morning for the first time in a long time and realized that's one of the most trafficked or most shared pieces I wrote for Decider last year.
Oh, wow. That's so great to hear. Thank you.
So I think there was a lot of interest, particularly in... I mean, your rise is a really interesting story. And if you don't mind, I would love for you to start at the beginning and tell me a little bit of the beginning of how you actually met and how that translated into a TV show.
Yeah, we are a group of six women who are all named Katie. Our variations of Katie or Catherine. And we actually met doing improv in Chicago. We were all performing there at Second City or at I.O. and kind of around town at different theaters. And Caitlin Barlow realized that there were a bunch of females performing improv named Katie. And so she put together a group, and we became the Katydids and performed comedy for a while. And then a really good friend of ours in Chicago, who's a casting director and director there, named Matt Miller, approached us and was like, hey, would you guys be interested in doing a web series about teachers and teaching? And so we said yes and started writing. And a production company in Chicago named Cap Gun Collective offered to shoot the web series for us. And long story short, TV Land saw the web series and offered to make it into a TV show. So now we're in our third season, and it will be, at the end of the season, it will be 50 episodes. So it's been a crazy journey.
So that's not a fluke. I mean, three seasons of a TV show is a real thing. So, you at least know by this point that you found some industry acceptance and, you made it in a way that just... gambling on something on, these women from Chicago, and we'll see if it works and, maybe it won't. I mean, you've gotten well beyond that point. What do you feel looking back on that now of like how likely that was to have happened at various stages?
I mean, it feels very surreal still, even though we're in our third season, but it feels like, well, I think this group is very smart and works really hard. It was also, luck. It was very serendipitous of that we happened to do web series kind of right before web series hit. Like when we were talking about Teachers and filming it, the web series, there weren't that many online. Like we had to search to find other ones. And it was kind of around the same time Broad City was being released for the first time. And it was like, oh, so there's this other group doing it, but it wasn't like everywhere. And so it was just really lucky that we hit it kind of, so we got some attention. And then, the whole process has been this huge learning curve of like, we didn't know how to write a pilot, so we figured out how to do it. And, whether that's like I took a class or some people read a book, it's like, okay. And then we got Ian Roberts and Jay Martell as our showrunners, who are the showrunners of Key and Peele. And Ian Roberts is one of the founders of UCB. So they have been like huge mentors the first season of that, season one was just like throwing us in and figuring it out as we go. And each step it was like, great, 10 episodes. We can write 10 episodes. And then we wrote 10 episodes and it was like, cool. Now, how do you shoot a show? There's so much with producing, whether that's like deciding costumes, deciding sets, figuring out, what's worth cutting, rewrites on the spot. Like, everything first season was new, but then by the time we got to season two, it did kind of feel like we know our voice. The good thing is, by the time we sold Teachers, we know us. We know our voice. We knew who the kids were. We knew the type of comedy we like to tell. So it was just kind of the process of how do you do that in the format of television.
So you went from 10 episodes the first season to 20 episodes the second season. Did that change your, you know, the way you wrote and the way you put episodes together for the second season?
I don't know that it changed. It did and it didn't. I feel like it's probably the best answer, because I feel like we started to look at the show more globally. Like, once you get a 20-episode order, you kind of start to be like, okay, where do we want to end up at the end of these 20 episodes? You know, how do we want these characters to grow over this course of time? So I think it kind of shaped how we thought about our character arcs a little bit differently. But as far as putting together the episodes, I think they kind of stayed the same. You know, we still tried to, I think the show became more of a narrative in season two. I think season one, it was a narrative, but I think we still had like sketch elements, and it kind of felt, I feel like season two, maybe the show became more of a narrative and we kind of focused more on that. So I guess it kind of changed in that way, but otherwise we still put things together the same. We still, you know, write the same way. We still partner off and write in pairs and kind of rotate the duties. We just had a lot more work to do. So I think it kind of expedited things, but otherwise I feel like something changed, but something still stayed.
I'm sure y'all have been busy this morning. Have you heard the news yet from ABC that Roseanne was canceled?
Yes. We talked about it in our writer's room for a bit, because we were A, shocked, but B, also, I personally thought it was a really great move on behalf of ABC. I thought her comments were abhorrent, and I thought it was really amazing that they took a stand to cancel, you know, such a hit show with the highest ratings in so long. You know, I thought it was great. But yeah, I was shocked.
Well, the lack of caution on her part is, I seems so shocking to me that, you know, she's got Wanda Sykes, who's a, you know, black female in her writer's room. The president of the network is a black woman. It's like, what is she thinking?
Right. Well, it's scary, because it's like, that means, you know, it's really ingrained in her, you know, that she's, I don't know. It was very disappointing and sad, but it was great that they canceled her show so quickly, right?
Yeah, right away.
I mean, and depending on how far you are into your third season, you could potentially have a new lunch lady, I guess.
That's true. I know.
Oh, God.
So we were talking before about how the second season had gotten a little more narrative, and that was one of the things that I noticed, particularly Katie O'Brien with your character, Mary Louise, is with Hot Dad, which was kind of a gag in the first season, and in the second season kind of developed into more of a thing with continuity and sort of moving forward progress. Tell me how that story or stories like that would be discussed in the writer's room.
Yeah, it's funny. It did start as a joke. It actually started in the web series. We had a one-off, like, two-minute episode of my character, Miss Bennigan, in the web series just having a parent-teacher conference with a quote-unquote hot dad. And then we decided to include it in the pilot just because we liked the bit and thought it was really funny. And then it kind of turned into this whole storyline that's now lasted like 50 episodes with my character, which has been great. But I think a lot of it is really a testament to the actor who plays Hot Dad. Ryan Caltagirone is so great in that role, and he plays it so well and grounded. And once we kind of had him on board and he started to play this character and really bring it to life, we were like, oh my gosh, this is a whole thing that we should explore. And that's happened a lot on the show. You know, the principal, who's played by Tim Bagley, that was never supposed to be a really large character that was a part of the main cast. And Tim plays the character so well and brought so much life to it that it just turned into this thing that we were like, oh my gosh, we have to write to this more. And you'll see in season three, Tim, or Principal Pearson becomes a huge part of the ladies and is more integrated into the cast. So it just kind of, I feel like a lot of it happens because you get really great actors who bring stuff to the role that you didn't think of before, and then, you know, you start to get inspired to write to it more.
You've had a lot of funny people in one-off type parts in the first two seasons. I think Rob Riggle was in maybe the second or third episode as the inappropriate photographer, and Ryan Hansen was in a really funny episode. Matt Walsh was in a really funny episode. Who do you think about who you want when you're writing, or are these just parts that you're hoping you can get somebody sort of like what you have in mind?
It's a little bit of both. Like, we've been lucky in that, like, the Rob Riggle part, he is who we thought of, and then we were fortunate enough that he said yes. And same with Rob Corddry. He is who I was thinking when we were talking about the janitor, and then luckily he was available and said yes to do it. So sometimes this season we're really excited. We wrote a part for David Wayne, and luckily he agreed to do it. So we were so thrilled to have him on set. Like, we've been huge fans of his for a long time. So yeah, sometimes it's just, and then sometimes we just write a character and there's a couple people in mind or this type, but there's not a specific person whose voice you have in your head when you're writing it.
How do you cast the kids? I know they have speaking roles in, I don't know, some episodes or most episodes, but do you have access to the same kids for very many episodes?
Yeah, it's just auditions. Watching kids auditions is really interesting. Yeah, it's just, we have every episode a bunch of kids submit tapes, or our casting director, Sherry Hernandez, runs auditions for the parts, and it's great because, you know, when you tend to have adult auditions, everyone kind of does about the same thing, but when you're watching a group of kids read a role, there are real risks, there are real choices, you know, there's a big range, so it's sometimes really fun to watch those auditions.
The characters are really well differentiated, but I wouldn't call them archetypes that I necessarily recognize in the way they come off. How did that work out? Because they seem to have been fully formed. I mean, the characters that are there aren't characters you seem to have found by adding characteristics over, you know, a season or two seasons. You seem to have known who everyone was more or less from the beginning.
Thank you.
Yeah, we how the characters developed and kind of started is they started in the web series, really. And we each kind of took like a really small part of ourselves that we thought was true about ourselves and really like blew it out. And so like, for example, like my character, Miss Bennigan, like I grew up very naive and grew up very religious. And so I was like, well, what if somebody's entire life was dominated by that? So I think as the show, you know, if you go back and watch the web series, which you can still do online, the characters are much more grounded and are much kind of, you know, more in their very early stages in the web series. And then I think as the show went on, they got really heightened and we really, you know, blew them out more. But that's how it started. Each of us just took a really small part of ourselves and expanded on that.
But a lot of it took a lot of, but you know, we spent 6 months writing the web series, like meeting once a week, everyone would bring in a sketch or something like that. And so you talk about the characters. So, you know, by the time the web series had happened, we'd spent 6 months talking about these characters. Then you film it and you feel it and it feels a little different. You might tweak it. Then we did the pilot and we spent 2 months writing the pilot and talking about the characters. Then by the time we got the series, you know, we spent 3 months writing season one. So by the time it went to series, basically, you probably had spent over a year talking about these characters, you know, and adjusting them, meaning like, my character, Miss Snap, like the original starting point for her was that I can be a people pleaser or someone who like cares about what other people think. And she wasn't like a mean girl or promiscuous or some of the maybe traits you would immediately think of her. But it was like as we were writing to that, it just kind of morphed into, well, we need an alpha. And you know, people who care a lot what they think tend to be superficial, tend to use fear tactics, tend to, you know, so it just started to like build from there. And she like 100%, I thought it would be someone a little closer to me. And now I like to think that she's very far from me. Who knows? Since she's a rude, promiscuous woman, but
well, It's, I mean, it's given you the ability to wind these characters up and let them go at certain situations and let it play out the way it would with that particular situation. I mean, the two of you are in a in the breast pump episode in season two, that the two of y'all are teamed up in that episode over you not wanting a teacher who's just had a baby to use the teacher's lounge to openly breast pump. And with one of you, it comes from this kind of conservative place. And for the other, it comes from this, I'm not sure what you would call it, that it's day class A or not becoming. But I mean, you're able to speak on a kind of a social issue in a really funny way without having to make these characters do things that are very far from what you would expect of them.
Yeah, I think the cool thing about having an ensemble show where the six female characters are so different from each other and so specific is that whenever we're pitching a plot or like an issue we want to tackle, like, immediately we know how all the characters would feel. It's just a question of now, like, who would be the funniest person to, you know, be the vehicle in that plot or vehicle for that issue, you know? So it is because they're so clearly defined and different from each other, it's been very easy once we pick out the areas we want to explore to figure out who would do what.
Have you had much time in the 3 years that you've been making the show to watch much other half-hour comedy?
Sometimes, like, there's stuff that I watch pretty well. Our writer's room is a huge fan of, this isn't comedy related, but like murder documentaries. I feel like because we work in comedy, typically what we are drawn to is like dramas or murder. But there are shows that I've watched pretty religiously, like half hours. Like, I watch Broad City pretty religiously. I think that show's really great.
I watch Veep.
Yeah.
I love Veep.
So there are definitely shows that we watch,
but I definitely go home and like to watch my Law & Order SVU and procedurals, because when you spend like 10 hours doing comedy, sometimes you just want to like see someone killed.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a lot of interesting stuff happening in half-hour comedy right now. I mean, if you look at, I mean, like the ABC family comedies I really like, there's a lot of interesting half-hour stuff on Netflix, but I see less of a peak TV proliferation of it than I do maybe drama and other things. And I'm wondering if you think the audience for comedy is changing or is unscripted. You know, I guess with Netflix, they're putting a lot more emphasis on stand-up than they are, or stand-up and like other kinds of talk formats and those sorts of things than they are necessarily half hour scripted. But I mean, do you see the audience reacting differently to comedy?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. I feel like to me, it's such like dependent on the demographic of like, there's still like, I thought, you know, kind of multicams were dying, and then no, they're, you know, like One Day at a Time is great. And I, as someone who doesn't like multicams, watch that and enjoy it. And so it's like, oh, so there is an audience for that. But then, you know, I think genres are kind of melding now, and that like some of my favorite comedies, I don't actually know if they're comedies, like Catastrophe or is it a show called Fleabag, and like I love those shows and they're really funny, but they're also really dark and really dramatic. And so I don't know. I think that the landscape is changing, but I don't know if it's. I actually think it's becoming like there's a more variety in the type of shows you're seeing because of places like Netflix and Amazon.
Yeah, and I think because the landscape is changing so much, you know, like there aren't as many like very prescriptive shows like there used to be, you know, like I think because of Netflix and Amazon, you know, there are these comedies that are sprouting that aren't very traditional, or because there isn't a traditional platform anymore. You know, like you used to know if you sold a show to ABC or NBC, you know what the format of that comedy will probably be. But because there's so many different outlets right now, I think it's kind of open, which is really exciting.
Well, even the branding on cable is shifting a bit. I know when Nobody's started, it started on TV Land, same network you're on, and Viacom moved it to the new Paramount Network when that started earlier this year. And it seems like an interesting, like, why did they do that? Or is Half Hour different on this other network than it is on this network? And I mean, what did you think about Nobody's moving?
Well, it's interesting because they've actually moved back to TV Land. So with,
oh, has it? Okay.
Yeah, they kind of, you're right. They started on TV Land and we were very excited because we love that show and think they're the three, you know, those three are so great. And then when they moved to Paramount, we were kind of like, oh my gosh, we were just bummed because, you know, it felt like it was us younger and Nobody's as this little family over there. But they've actually moved them back to TV Land. I think because the Paramount network, I don't know, but I think because they were launching, they were kind of moving things around to see where they did the best. And, I think Nobody's has done a really great job of building a following on TV Land. And so they moved them back over. And I think TV Land, they're trying to concentrate more with comedies. I don't know if any of that's true. I just think it might be.
We're just speculating.
Yeah, we're not sure. But so, yeah, I think they've moved them back since.
And the six of you have also had other things going. I know when we talked last year, different combinations of you were working on film scripts or other projects. Are you in production at such a pace that you're not having time to do other things? Or are different combinations of you actually going forward on some of those projects?
I mean, we have zero time. But because we're delusional people, we do still try to move forward with other projects. Like O'Brien and I are right now working on a feature. But yeah, it's like impossible. Every week we set a goal of like, let's try to work on this. And then like every week it's okay, well maybe I got 15 minutes on it. But you know, we still try just because it's nice to have outside projects. And I love teachers and I love the Katie Diz, but it's nice to just, as a writer, it's very fulfilling to also just work on something else on the side. You know, just to try something different.
And you popped up on Corporate, I think, for an episode this season also?
I did. Jake Weissman, one of the creators of that, is one of my best friends from college. So it was very crazy. I'm like the only one who cares about this story. No one else is very weirded out. But him and I went to college. We were not successful in any way. I planned to write, to be a playwright. He planned to be, was an English major. And then cut to 10 years later, basically the same year, we both got series orders of writing, producing, and acting in our own show. So he's been on Teachers and I've been on Corporate. And I think that's so crazy. Like, what are the chances? But everyone else is like, yeah, okay.
I love Corporate. He and Matt were on the first or second episode of this podcast.
Oh, really?
At the beginning of the year. Yeah, I really like that show.
That show is great.
It's so good.
He had been on Teachers like in a walk-on last season too, hadn't he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he played the creepy guy. So yeah, no, Corporate is great. I think that show and those guys are so smart and so funny.
And I love Detroiters on Comedy Central, which is a totally different vibe than Corporate, and probably closer to the comedic vibe of your show.
Yeah. No, and Sam Richardson and Tim Robinson are, again, they're just really smart, really funny. That's a great show.
What else are you seeing when you look around? Are you seeing that there's a place for film projects to go? I mean,
I feel like right now the landscape's definitely television. I just think there's so much changing with TV. Although, I will say, it's been really exciting recently with films like Blockers with Kay Cannon, and you know, I think some really strong voices have popped up in film that I think has been really exciting to watch and develop. But I do think television is kind of the landscape right now, where there's just so much content and there's so much good content. Like, I feel like every day someone's asking me, like, did you watch this and this? And I'm like, no, I've never even heard of that. So I don't know. I feel like TV is kind of the time right now, but with that being said, I also think there's been some really exciting stuff film-wise, especially with women, like with Kay and Blockers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and similar to Blockers, I saw Abiza last week on Netflix, you know, female screenwriter, three females starring in that film, decent budget. I mean, I think there's a lot happening right now that seems to be happening on Amazon and Netflix for, you know, for film, but those are more the films I want to see. So if they're going to get to TV faster, if they're going to get to TV first, I mean, that's where I'm going to see them for the most part anyway. And I think that's probably the case for a lot of people that watch those kinds of movies.
Yes. Yeah. We heard Ibiza is really good. I haven't watched it yet. I need to watch it, but I heard really great things.
But like Blockers is a film I've not even seen yet and would love to see it and probably will as soon as it gets out on demand or Netflix or HBO or wherever it winds up. But I just, it seems like going to the theater, I've drifted away from the big blockbuster or away from the romantic comedies and those kind of movies to more the, you know, the Marvel movies and
right.
that sort of thing. But I still want to see those kind of movies. I mean, I hope there's a market for.
Right. Like, I think why I love Blockers or got me excited was, like, when we first moved out here maybe 4 years ago and I was doing, like, feature pitches, it felt like every, this is sexist, but basically every meeting I went into, all anyone wanted to hear was if I had a romantic comedy. I don't know if you'd ask men that, but whatever, you know, I'll take it. But they were all saying, like, we think romantic comedies are dead, so we're just trying to see is there any new twist on it. And I was kind of, and it, you know, kind of that, like, the 90s or 80s and 90s was a time when romantic comedies were great, but it was based in a lot of like sexist ideas of this woman like doing everything she can to change herself or to chase this man who didn't really like her. And that now what people were wanting to watch was the trend of like, you're just special. Like it was a lot of the Hunger Games and not Descendants. Shailene Woodley one where it's like they're just chosen. And then, so anyway, I went on all these pitches where they were like, is there like a rom-com?
Divergent,
yes.
Yeah.
And basically every meeting I went on was saying like rom-coms are dead, but we're looking to bring it. And Blockers felt like that. It felt like it still was a very classic story of like prom night and parents not wanting their kids to have sex is a story that's been told a million times. But they told it in a really modern and feminist and empowering way, and the jokes were still fresh, and it was a romantic comedy. So you know, it was great. It made me feel like, oh, these are still, because as someone who doesn't love the superhero movies, there are still movies, and I haven't seen Ibiza, but things like that I want to watch, but just aren't necessarily getting made at the same rate that they used to be.
I had in the Decider piece that the Teachers season 2 premiere was the top rated at the time, the top rated original episode for TV Land, and I don't know if it still is or not. If there's been a season of Younger since then, but what? How do you feel about being a flagship show or one of a couple of flagship shows on a still relatively small network, but getting a lot of the marketing attention of an entire network behind you?
We feel really lucky. You know, we totally lucked out with TV Land and deciding to call that our home. They've been unbelievably supportive and have really supported the show and supported our voice and supported our vision. And, you know, we just feel so lucky that they've gotten behind the show and have really pushed it, because it is a show about six, you know, people that nobody knows. And we're all nobodies, and we all came from, you know, an improv background in Chicago. And they've been really great about getting behind us and pushing the show and for people to watch the show. So it was really exciting. We were really excited to find that out. And then we've also been really grateful to have them, you know, supporting us through the way, because a lot of networks don't do that for their shows. And so we've been really fortunate with them.
What did you come into the writer's room this season thinking about or talking about? I guess this would have been several months ago.
It's interesting. Well, we it takes us 14 months to do 20 episodes because we do everything, you know, write, act, and edit. So we basically ended season 2 and had 4 weeks and then started season 3. So to be perfectly honest, we walked in and we're like, does anyone have any ideas? Because it was like not enough of a break of like, we just 4 weeks earlier had finished season 2. And while that is so amazing that we have this opportunity, this season coming in, I would say the first week was everyone going, so like, what if,
yeah,
maybe? And then we got into it. Once you're into it, ton of ideas. And we talked a lot about, once we were in the writing, like, you know, it is episode 30 through 50. So you have to start broadening your world, telling new stories. You can't just keep doing the same, you know, parent-kid story. You know, how are we going to
tell the stories of teachers, tell the stories of these characters, but move forward. So there was a lot of discussion about trying to change things up. And some of that was adding new characters. You mentioned Ryan Hansen earlier, but we've brought him back. He's in a couple episodes. And
oh, that's great.
Yeah, I won't say, but he has a more prominent role at the school. And so that was fun. And then we brought in Patricia Belcher as the front office lady, and she's really funny. And we started to establish some things that we now, through all of season three, go back to, like the local school council, which is basically the school board, but, you know, established those people and are now going to go back there a couple times so that we can tell new stories. You know, not everything's just in the classroom and whatnot.
The show's not political, but it's definitely got a social cultural awareness of what's happening in the world. I mean, you've had social media play into storylines. You've had, breast pumping we talked about. I mean, you've had those kinds of things come into the show. Do you approach those as we really need to say something about X this season? We really need to include something about this particular issue this season?
I think we definitely feel a responsibility as creators to highlight things that are really important to us and things that we feel really passionate about. Like, we did a plot about encouraging girls to get into STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math. That was something that was really important to us. The breastfeeding was something that was really important to us. So there are definitely topics, like, because we have this platform, we do feel a responsibility to highlight certain political issues that we feel really strongly about, especially as women. You know, I think because we have a predominantly female writers' room, it's almost all women. I think we have two men, Ian Roberts, our showrunner, and then Aaron Mervis, our scripty little guy. So they're the only men. And so I think, you know, we feel like we can do topics that are more geared towards women and more political towards women. And this season, we actually decided to tackle guns in schools. And so we're actually getting ready to film that episode. And that's probably the biggest political thing we've taken on.
Yeah,
that we felt really strongly about.
There's a lot of stuff that we'll, like what you said, what you touched on, like breastfeeding and girls in math and science. There's a lot of stuff that we'll talk about, but we do acknowledge that this is a, like O'Brien said, we feel a responsibility of, like, if we're going to have this platform, I don't want to just tell jokes. I do want to say something. I think that's what makes comedy, you know, takes it to the next level or can make it more touching or emotional. But this is also, like, just a single cam comedy on TV land. So there's a lot of stuff we wanted to tackle that we haven't. But our season 3B premiere will be gun control. But we've been trying to do it for a while, but it's really hard because it's not funny, right? Like, it's just sad.
Sad.
So how do you make something sad funny? So we're mapping guns with a bear, the Betsy DeVos comment about grizzly bears. So we have a bear moving next door, and there's a loose bear in the neighborhood, and we just map that. And so there should be a lot of comedy in that we're going to have, like, you know, us freaking out and then a bear just lounging across the street sunbathing. But it's supposed to be and us doing, like, bear lockdowns and bear drills, and, like, we go to the city council instead of getting funding, instead of getting the bear regulated, we get regulated. It's all that. But hopefully there will still be comedy in that, like, you know, it'll be this really slow, dumb bear walking around, but you're still making the same point.
Did you have any discussion about a tonal change of this is something we could do if we're going to do our very special episode, this is the topic?
We did. Yeah. Like Katie said, you know, this was something that we had tried now for, you know, forever to do, and we could not figure out a way to do it that was very funny, but, you know, we felt like really made a statement. And so tonally, this episode is different. Our goal, you know, was to make it really funny, but also really send a message. And I think this is probably, this particular episode, I think tonally will feel different because it is dealing with such a big issue. But I think it's also a topic that we really took a stand on and, you know, made a political message. Like, I think before, we always try and show both sides. And we also do that with this episode, but there is a tonal shift with this particular episode. And I'm really excited for people to watch it. You know, the hope whenever you're doing any type of message or highlighting a political topic is that, you know, it's never our intention to say this is what's right or this is how you should feel about a topic or this is what we should do. But, like, our goal as creators is to, like, present an issue and hopefully just make people think about it differently. So we hope with this episode that, you know, people walk away thinking about gun control differently, and maybe think about it differently than they did before is kind of our goal.
Well, I really appreciate you talking to me. I'm looking forward to seeing the season premiere next week and getting my summer TV schedule starting to come together.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having us on.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it.